The Giants have this big game, in case you didn't know, Sunday night against the Philadelphia Eagles, division rival. Bottom line is the Giants need to assert themselves and beat a tough opponent on the road. You know, Roman, Bill Parcells used to tell us all the time, you don't really know about your team. You don't really know who you are until you win a tough game on the road. Well, in my mind, this is the Giants' opportunity to do so.
Yeah, 100%. And for me, it comes down to really a growth and a confidence that we've seen this team. You know, we held our breath early on, 0-2. Then you rip off two big wins in 5 days. And then they had now 10 days to say, is this going to help us bring this momentum? Are we growing as a team? Can we beat this team that's number one, you know, offense in the NFL? And they came and they won a dogfight last week and really controlled the game in the second half. And Paul, that's not a game that they would have won this time last year. So in terms of growth and confidence, now I think this football team has what it takes to go on the road again and face a tough divisional opponent and do what it takes to come up with a victory. You're not afraid of the Eagles at this point. You're not afraid of their offense or afraid of, you know, there's not this hesitation, well, I hope they don't do this. It's like they're preparing for the best Eagles team they face. That's the next game and all that stuff. But, again, I think in terms of growth and confidence, I think that's where this team – the team is definitely headed in the right direction.
All right. Let's go over the injury report. After yesterday, the Giants had Rashad Jennings and Spencer Paysinger out of practice. Paysinger's got a hamstring. He's been out a couple of weeks.
Right.
Jennings sprained his left MCL in the game. He did not work yesterday. Quite frankly, I just don't see him playing against Philadelphia. But, hey, you never know. Medicine's a good thing. I just don't see it happening, which means Andre Williams and Peyton Hillis will carry the load. But for Philadelphia, they got a couple of real significant injuries that I do want to address. Michael Kendricks and D'Amico Ryans, the two starting inside linebackers, have not been practicing. They are badly beaten up. Ryans has a groin. Kendricks has had a calf now for a few weeks. And quite honestly, if you're the Giants and you want to continue working on that power running game, this is a team you should be able to do it against.
Yeah, and as long as you're getting sustained blocks at the line of scrimmage, the offensive line's been playing extremely well up front, creating those holes. Now with Andre Williams' show, it's getting Andre Williams or Peyton Hillis past the line of scrimmage so they can become those downhill runners, because those guys are very capable of getting 3-4 yards a pop and eventually breaking a big one with additional momentum. So I'm pretty excited, not because of who didn't practice today, but I'm pretty excited just with the matchups in terms of the Giants' offensive line versus the Philadelphia Eagles' defensive line.
All right, Roman, let's go to the calls because we got people on hold already. The Giants have just hit the practice field a short time ago. Nugs from Minnesota, you're first on the show. Hello.
Hey, what's going on, P-Dot?
How are you?
Nugs.
I'm all right. Hey, what's going on, Roman? It's my first time talking to you. It's nice being able to connect with you.
Doing well. What you got?
I just wanted to piggyback on what Paul was saying. Those guys are hurt. They're hurt right up the middle. I hope that you know, our trends continue and we can just smash mouth these guys out and control the time of clock, because this is a division game and this is the type of games where, you know, everybody's talking about Shady's not having a good season so far, this, that, and other. This is the type of game that will wake him up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
We hate them. He hates us. And there's no better time for a guy to get out of a slump than against a division opponent. And I hope that our defense doesn't just feel like we just got to throw our jerseys out there because this guy sucks this year or whatever. You know what I mean? I hope they keep bringing the same intensity that they've been bringing.
Look, there is no way Tom Coughlin's going to let this team get complacent. And quite frankly,
no.
The Giants aren't good enough to just waltz out onto the field and beat anybody.
Yeah, and when you look at this football team, you know, going in on Sunday, divisional games are dogfights. I mean, you know both teams. You play them twice.
They're wars. They really are.
You're right down the turnpike, if you will. And I'm looking forward to seeing some of the matchups. And I think in terms of what the fans view as on the other side, this Giants defense is preparing for Shady McCoy at his best, not a 2.9 yards a carry Shady McCoy. And we talked about this yesterday. One 50-yard run changes that average significantly. Mm-hmm. So it's not about they're beat up here, they're beat up there. You're preparing for them to give you your best shot. Two teams that know each other well, that should be a hard-fought game. And for me offensively, and it's not so much playing keep away, but you want to run the ball, control the clock, you want to manage third downs. that naturally and circumstantially keeps those guys on the sidelines. I mean, you want Nick Foles. I mean, if you could draw this up perfectly, the Giants would go down and score, eat up some time, then they'd make the Eagles punt. Give them the ball. Giants go down and score again. Make the Eagles, you know, short field punt, maybe field goal. Now they haven't had 10. Because with this offense, they need more plays. Chip Kelly's system, they want 70 plays. They want 10 plays.
They want 85 to 90.
They want 80 plays. Yeah, so and if you're sitting there on the sidelines and you had 10, 15 plays in a quarter, I mean, that slows them down significantly. So you want to make sure, not in terms of keep away, but that you're executing and you're really marching the ball downfield and you're taking them off their rhythm. Any offense that's been explosive throughout the history of the league, the best formula to slow those guys down is to keep them on the bench.
I want to give you something very interesting about Philadelphia's running game. Now, McCoy, as Roman mentioned, is averaging like 2.8 yards, 2.9 yards a carry. His longest run of the season is only 21. And one of the reasons is because he is an outstanding cutback runner. And this offensive line, specifically the interior of the offensive line, Roman, they're not holding their blocks very well. They've been really sloppy. They're not getting the job done. And you know as well as I do, a cutback guy needs that lane to then make his cutback. If he cuts back and there's no room, he can't go anywhere.
Yeah, and guys like that, and obviously Darren Sproles, as you know, who I played with in San Diego for 3 seasons, you've got to give those guys a two-way go. You've got to Everyone's got to have a hat on the hat.
There's got to be a backside.
And then this guy can freestyle, go backside. And with the backside blocking, that's considered a point of attack as well because the backside has to be secure so that he can cut it back and rip off
that's
a big
exactly
run.
Right.
So, you know, lane integrity, and, you know, Carl Banks talks about this, that defensive integrity on the backside, that is huge. Front side guy forces them to either spill it or stretch it. Backside contain prevents those big runs.
So now McCoy had a season-high 81 yards last week on 24 carries against St. Louis, which is not good. Again, his season-long is 21. He's only run for one touchdown. But here's an interesting number for you, Roman. The Eagles, and this shows you about how the cutback hasn't been there, their offense, when they run wide, which is 41% of the time, to the outside, to the sidelines, which is what they're doing now, they're not getting those cutback runs anymore. They're just not there. They're averaging 4.3 yards a carry just by running it outside and McCoy just cutting it upfield and making that one move to go vertical.
Right.
He's not able to do all that other shifty stuff that he used to do because this offensive line is not good enough. The Giants must believe in themselves. Believe, you know, Antoine Roll says, believe what you see.
Right.
Believe what you see. Don't fake yourself out to think about all of the fancy stuff that McCoy and his offensive linemen used to be able to do. You just do what you're supposed to do. Be clean, be smart, be disciplined, and he'll be there for you to tackle.
And we have to mention, this Giants defense has done well in the past as in terms of stopping Shady McCoy. So this isn't this time last year where you couldn't figure out what the Eagles were going to do and this, was this Chip Kelly system going to work in the NFL? And obviously they had spurts where they were on fire. But
sure,
divisional game, linebackers that and D-line that are familiar and comfortable now 2 games in to this series, the Chip Kelly system, I think they have a system in plan.
Big factor before we go to Joe. Joe, give me half a second here. Mathias Kiwanuka told me yesterday that we've seen Chip Kelly stuff now twice. And I said to him, you go against the Giants no huddle in practice. You've done that every day for 2 or 3 months now.
Right.
I said, doesn't that kind of help you? He said, absolutely it does. He said, in terms of our conditioning, in terms of our communication, in terms of our pace and tempo defensively, we've got that stuff down. The edge that the Eagles had with the nouveau Chip Kelly system of run and gun, 90 plays a game, that edge has been neutralized by the fact that teams have seen them, and now the Giants are practicing against a similar offense anyway. I would not expect this Giants defense to be at all humbled, confused, or discombobulated by what Philadelphia does.
No,
I would not.
And I think if we look at the way this game has developed over the last, you know, 10 or 15 years, I mean, this isn't, you know, the 99 Rams. It took the NFL 5 years before they caught up to him.
The greatest show on turf.
Yeah, greatest show on turf. I mean, it took the NFL, you know, 3 or 4 years to figure out an answer to Michael Vick.
Only takes a year now.
Yeah, it only takes a year. Everyone's more athletic. The linebackers, the defensive ends, quarterbacks on a whole are more athletic. You just have a faster, quicker game. And this has become a matchup game. Every player, or most teams have a Darren Sproles, a change of pace back, a long tight end that they can stretch the field. I mean, things are a lot more similar now than they were 10 years ago when there was one team that was an anomaly that ran this offense that no one that came out of college.
Is a copycat
even Wildcat. Yeah. All those things have been neutralized. So, again, they're still effective. When they're executing, they're still as effective as anyone. But
no question.
It's not as an anomaly as it was, you know, this time last year.
Okay, let's go back to the calls. Joe from Pennsylvania, you're next on the show. Hello.
Hey, good morning. Great to talk to you.
Hi.
Hey, Joe.
I was going to say that the Eagles, they're definitely missing Jackson where, you know
Big
what I
time.
Mean, he always had to have the safety over the edge on him to help protect. Now he can come up, and the main thing is to stop McCoy and use our right in his running game. He's been doing a lot of dancing, but then and his average is like 2 or 3 yards a carry. It's not three, but then you look at Sproles, and he's been hitting the hole. And they're arguing a little bit even last week. His average is around 7 yards a pop. He's been making the big play, and he was even in for them in their last crucial series at the end of the game last week. And they're on their cornerbacks, too, that they just ain't covering right and stuff. They've been giving up a lot of plays. So they're going to dress all in black this week. I guess maybe getting ready for Halloween, maybe psych the Giants out or something.
They're going to wear all black uniforms?
Playing up on their radio stations,
yeah,
you know,
too.
What Roll has been saying in that, you know, for bulletin board material. So, but they did, McCoy and them, they've been giving Eli credit in that, saying that he's really back in on his game. And I did hear this just here on ESPN. Next, his brother, he's the second fastest one releasing the ball. So I just wanted to say that. And I want to tell you, I haven't seen Stevie Brown in at all. And I really would think that maybe this week, you know, that he could possibly fill in for one of them linebackers to help. I'm more concerned with their tight ends in that because I think our cornerbacks will match up. But, you know, with Stevie Brown, I thought maybe he could fill in and help in covering their running backs and wide receivers.
Joe, thanks for the call, and listen in. I'm going to let Roman address the safety situation. I want to talk about Sproles and DeSean Jackson.
Well, I was going to talk about the defense and DeSean Jackson. I mean, one thing people fail to realize, I mean, they've lost DeSean Jackson, obviously. But you can't have one eye on Shady McCoy and one eye on the rest of them because that's what they want.
Oh, yeah.
Because Riley Cooper and Jeremy Maclin won run right by you for a 50-yard touchdown because those guys are excellent route runners. And in terms of Stevie Brown, I mean, Paul, you could probably answer a little bit more to where he is, where he stands right now on this defense.
He made some mental errors.
Early.
He busted some coverages early in the season, and so they went to Quentin Demps. It's really that simple. You know, Tom Coughlin has little patience for mental mistakes
right. Because
you can't recover from those. And so they went to Quentin Demps, and he's playing fast, and he's playing with confidence. And so right now, if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Right.
Unless Demps works himself out of the lineup, I don't know that Brown's going to leap over him again.
No, you're exactly right. So, but it's good to have two guys with that much depth. I just don't think Stevie Brown, a lot of people have said that he's not the player that he was at the end of 2012 when he came back earlier because of the mental mistake or whatever.
ACL is a pretty nasty thing to come back
from. Yeah, it takes 2 years. I mean, He got hurt. He got it hurt early enough in 2013 to have a full season to recover.
Right.
But by the offseason, he was really healthy. But, again, there's a lot of things psychologically and different things.
Sure.
And I've been through many multiple injuries and offseason scopes and surgeries and rehabbing and the season just never ending. You go from the end of the season to rehab and treatment schedules, but I'm glad that the Giants have options in terms of Will Demps to fill up, fill in well at that safety position.
I do want to address Sproles, though, and I know you played with him in San Diego, Roman. Let me make something very clear. The Eagles may be the best screen team in the National Football League. Now, Sproles is very, very important to that screen. He's second in the NFL in yards after the catch this year, gaining over 12.5 yards per reception after the catch, okay? It is a very big problem for the Giants because they have not done well this year, despite playing pretty good defensively overall.
Right.
On the checkdowns, the screens, the dump downs.
Yeah, there have been some big plays. Yeah,
right?
Paul, there have been some big
plays.
Okay,
so follow me here, Roman. Yeah. Follow me. That's what they do well. They've given up trying to get those deep DeSean Jackson touchdowns because he's not there anymore. Macklin does some of it, but they can't get as many of those. So what they did was with their offense, they realized that Jackson's gone because he and Chip Kelly had a falling out.
Right.
They went and made the deal. They traded to get Sproles from the Saints, and what they've decided was we're going to make more big plays out of the short dump-offs. Sproles is catching the ball an average of a third of a yard behind the line of scrimmage. Okay? Now, some people will say that works as a run. Well, it doesn't because they're getting him out in space when he touches the ball, Roman, and you know what that means. He's
exactly.
Dangerous.
And when he gets that ball in space, he's already gotten 20 yards or so momentum, those wheel routes running the sideline.
There you
go.
As
soon as he catches the ball, he's already in full speed. That gives him the ability to make that first guy miss or just outrun him. And and he's constantly 10, 15, 20 yards down the sidelines on those little dump-off passes. So what that does, though, it starts to make those safeties and linebackers respect that. Then here comes the deep balls. Here comes the Riley. I mean, so it's a formula that's not uncommon in the NFL. But if the Giants can find a way to solve that issue
this week,
you won't see it repeatedly come up again.
I got a suggestion for you.
Sure.
Jaquan Williams, spy Sproles. He's the only linebacker who's got the athleticism and the speed to have a chance.
Well, you just have to make sure that you're not so predictable. That offense sees that, and then you get in and out of a package real quickly. And then, maybe do a pump and go or give a halfback option. Those choice routes where you go outside and come in. It's hard to defend a lot of those, Paul.
I asked Jaquan yesterday about what is the key to containing Sproles and specifically the screen game. And he said it's about recognition. You have to know what's coming. Because as you just said, if they fake, if they show something else, and then now you get burned. If the Giants are really sharp on their keys and they read the plays well, that's their best friend, is it not?
Yeah, and when you have that recognition, then you can become more, anticipatory, if you will, in terms of recognizing it by formation or by some other means, being anticipating it, and then going in to make the tackle.
What you got to do.
Yeah, you have to do that. You almost have to, and it's a chess game, trust me. It's not an exact science, but that's why these guys get paid the big bucks, and Jaquan Williams probably would get paid some big bucks after this season.
And that's why they watch a lot of film.
To make those, exactly. That's why they're professional.
And Trell says, believe what you see. There it is. Let's go to Jason from New Jersey. You're next on the program. Hello. Jason, you're next on Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Hey.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to say that I think that the Giants defense is going to have a dominant performance this Sunday night against the Eagles, and I'm going to break down why. Because I feel like the way that our defense matches up everywhere across the board, we have like the advantage. Because you look at starting it with their receivers, like DRC against Jeremy Maclin. I mean, Jeremy Maclin's kind of like a speed receiver, which is DRC's strength. It's just the speed. Like you saw the way he shut down DeSean Jackson. I feel like DRC can handle Jeremy Maclin. And I think that the even bigger mismatch is Prince Amukamara on their number two receiver, Riley Cooper, because, first of all, I think Riley Cooper is one of the worst number two starting receivers in the NFL. And based on the way the Prince is playing, he should be able to blanket Riley Cooper.
Before you go anywhere else, and I want Roman to make a comment on this too, DRC is battling an ankle and a hip injury and something called a TL
in his IT band.
Yeah, an IT band.
Iliotibial band, yeah.
In his thigh, and he's going to work through it. He hasn't missed any practices, and he's going to work through it. But how much of an impediment do you think that is?
Well, it's day-to-day, and I think it's actually good that they play Sunday night. You almost get another half a day in terms of healing and rest so that DRC could be 100%. But let's not forget that these are NFL football players that get paid and that they study and they do well. They're very competent receivers. I mean, I'm not going to say that Riley Cooper is this second worst number two in the league. I mean, that's from a football player standpoint. When you start to believe that, that's when you get burned. That's when you get beat. Because I've seen Riley Cooper make – he's had some other issues personally within the last year or so, but – in terms of as a receiver, I've seen Riley Cooper, go up and really make some good plays for this Chip Kelly offense.
All right, let's let him finish. Did you have another point? Oh, he's already gone. Okay, that's okay. Not a problem. Who's next? Is this Jason or is this Jim? What do we got, John? We're going to go to Jim. Jim from Alabama. You're on the program.
Hey, guys. Hey, Jim. Thanks. Love the show. Listen often. Two questions today about the Giants' rushing attack. The first one, before the season began, the offensive line was like a real concern for us. I mean, we were wondering if we were, you know, going to be able to rush the ball at all.
I tried to bring this guy out of retirement.
Yeah. I mean, right now, Rashad Jennings is the third leading rusher in the NFL. And Williams is the 23rd leading rusher. I'm super pumped for the offensive line and what it's doing. We haven't had any injuries. Dallas has supposedly got the best offensive line in the NFL right now. Everyone keeps saying that. Would you guys comment not on will this offensive line make it this season, but how good is it? Where would you rank it in offensive lines across the NFL right now, and given the fact that Jeff Schwartz is going to come back sometime midseason?
Thank you for your call, Jim. And I think it's always really early to really see where teams rank. And I know that we live in a culture of like power rankings and who's rated the best. And there's different formulas that get it done. You know, and I think traditionally, you know, the Steelers and some of these teams always had great big offensive lines. The Giants, as you know, Paul, they found a combination of guys that you or I didn't think would be the starting group if you went back 6 weeks ago.
You're right.
But that inside three, you know, John Jerry, J.D. Walton, Richburg, those guys have done a tremendous job really keeping those D-linemen at the point of attack, keeping hat on the hat. I was really critical in preseason about John Jerry just in terms of he's like your big man that's shooting three-pointers. He's a better pass protector than a run blocker at that size. But he's improved. He's gotten better every week. Yep. Obviously, he started the last two seasons at Miami Dolphins. I mean, they still play football at the Dolphins as well.
They do.
But, again, in terms of ranking where teams belong, look, the Cowboys drafted Zach Martin from Notre Dame, starting a right guard.
So Roman, they've drafted three number one picks of offensive linemen
In the last 4 years. So I was just saying last year's draft. So, and it's paying off for them. You know, you need a running game. You need protection for Tony Romo or any quarterback. But in terms of ranking who's better, who's best, it's really about believing in what you do. If it works for that organization, that team, then it works. You know, what the Eagles offensive linemen are required to do is different than what Dallas or the Giants are required to do. So that makes the argument really apples and oranges. But in terms of health, if you got five guys blocking together and staying healthy for 16 games, maybe 20 games, you know, O'Hara, those guys, what, 5 years they didn't miss a game? I mean, that's when you're really having true success, and that's when you have really good productivity. Five guys playing together that works well together. And, I mean, I remember when I was here, you know, Stone and Greg started together for 4 years here and, like, 3 years in San Francisco.
Yeah.
I mean, what a coincidence. And and I had different left guards, and even all throughout my career I always had a different left guard every year. And sometimes that really hurt the cohesion of the group, but it really starts with that inside three. Which for the Giants are playing extremely well. And I'm really glad that Beatty is at least somewhere back to where he was in 2012. And Justin Pugh is really getting better every week as well.
Yeah, no question. All right, let's go back to the phones. Dre from Atlanta, you're on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hello.
Hey, good afternoon, Paul. What's going on there, Roman?
Hi.
Just two quick comments. One, I was watching some of the Philly games, and I'm going to say they run that zone defense even with the when they stunt. R.J. Williams totes that rock. He's a violent runner. I could see him having a field day, and he seems like he gets better the more carries he gets. But my main concern is on defense. It seems like we have a tendency to give up at least one big play every game. I think in order to stifle Philly's offense, we got to run to the ball. We got to gang tackle. You know, we got to be hungry. Everybody has to meet at the ball, get a good pass rush, have zone discipline, and do what you're supposed to do. Seem like the mantra is don't do too much. Stay within yourself.
Let me address what you said a second ago. And Dre, did you have another point? And then I really want to talk about what you just said.
No, that's it.
Okay, let's hang up on you. Listen in on the program. What I want to address, Roman, is as you've watched this three-game winning streak by the Giants, in the first half of last weekend's game against Atlanta, I saw a ton of missed tackles.
Right.
Shoddy tackling, which I had not seen in the four quarters against Houston. I had not seen in the four quarters against the Redskins. Mm-hmm. And I did not see in the second half against the Falcons. But in that first half against Atlanta, missed tackles, which in my mind, that's akin to dropping a pass on offense.
Right.
When you
miss
a tackle on defense, that to me, that's the same error, in other words, in terms of value. You can't have that. You can't have it in a game of this nature with guys like Macklin and Ertz and Sproles.
Right.
You will pay for it.
Well, these guys are undersized anyway. So if you miss – if the first guy doesn't get to the to one of these guys, off, whether it's Macklin, McCoy, whoever.
Sure.
Sproles. You better believe that guy's going to get 10 more yards on the ground.
Yeah.
Or in whatever. And again, you're
They're
right.
They're a speed team.
But one thing I'm glad to see that this team, they almost self-corrected themselves in the second half, how they played in Atlanta in the second half versus that first half. And that's where I think that 10 days off, two games in 5 days was extremely difficult to do. They did it grand fashion, dominated. The bye week came back. You know, now you haven't played in 10 days, and I think that's what led to some of those first half slumps, if you will, in the first half of the Atlanta game. But I'm glad that this team put themselves in a position to, you know, I hate this term, unanswered points, 20 unanswered points on offense.
And 17 minutes to finish the game.
And that's something we wouldn't have seen this time last year.
No, we wouldn't have seen
Absolutely
it a month
not.
Ago.
We wouldn't have even believed that that was a possibility.
All right,
because
but,
we were all in, oh, here we go again mode, you know, those first 2 weeks. And then anytime the team punted, everyone's kind of got their fingers crossed. But this team is growing. They're getting better. But I think they're very, very well aware. And it goes to my point a few minutes ago that this will be the third time this team has seen this Chip Kelly offense.
Yeah.
And not that you eliminate him. I mean, because teams are going to make big plays. I think fans need to understand. Somebody's going to score a touchdown. I mean, on the other side, it will happen. But you can't let it be the determinant factor in the outcome of the game. You can't let it be the nail breaker or the nail, whatever that term is, nail biter, nail breaker.
Is it the backbreaker.
Backbreaker, my bad. You can't let it become the backbreaker, if you will.
To the caller's point about gang tackling to the ball, the Giants had one missed tackle in the second half the other day. You know which one it was, don't you?
Well, the touchdown.
There you go.
Yeah, the touchdown.
You know, Roll didn't wrap up Anton Smith, and he went 74 yards for a touchdown on a little dump off to the left side.
And to your point, a drop ball that could be a touchdown is also a missed tackle that ends up being a touchdown on defense, so you're exactly right.
And against this team, this Eagles team, that could very well happen again when you miss a tackle. See, I believe, and Roman, I don't know what you think, but – in my mind, you don't ever want to have more than 5 or 6 missed tackles in a game. I'll accept 3, 4, 5, even as many as 6, because you have to give the other guys credit. They get paid too. And they're going to sometimes force you to miss a tackle. They're going to make a move. They're going to drag you. They're going to do what they do. But when you start seeing a game that's got 8, 9, 10,
right,
12 missed tackles in a game, chances are you've lost.
Well, also, sometimes that first guy defensively becomes the sacrificial lamb, if you will, in terms of that first guy misses, the guy spills it inside, here comes the rest of the defense. I mean, that's what you want. But
sure,
one-on-one, which is very difficult, if I'm running down the sidelines.
Well, that was a blitz situation, and that's why
exactly.
Roll was on an island.
Exactly. If you're on an island, it's very hard to tackle a guy one-on-one coming full speed, and you're almost in retreat mode. But if it's a run or if it's an outside play, and that first guy's got to make the guy cut it back inside, the rest of the defense should be there to help. And that's why you need multiple, I guess, white jerseys this Sunday. Multiple white Giants jerseys and helmets and NY, you know, hitting these guys and making them pay when they come back inside.
One thing for sure, if you don't redirect them, you better hold them up long enough for somebody else to get there and help you out.
100%.
Alex from Georgia, you're next on the show. Hello.
Yes, Paul. So glad to talk to you.
Thank you. How are you?
And thank you so much. What a great show for a Giant fan like me.
Especially down in Georgia.
Yeah. Listen, Paul, and also Roman, I have a real concern about special teams, particularly on kickoff returns. I know that the Philadelphia Eagles, at least that's what I'm told and I've seen, the Philadelphia Eagles have exploited their special teams to their advantage. Now, the Giants, I'm not really very, how could I say it?
Confident in the Giants' special teams.
Yeah, yeah.
I get you.
And particularly on kickoffs, Paul. Now, I know you're a stats guy and know a lot about stuff. My thing is this. I'm not really sure that either Quinton Demps or Parker, although Parker's really great as a receiver, I'm not so sure that they could run that thing out from the end zone. So what do you think?
All right, well, let's take this in two parts. First of all, the Giants' kick return game really hasn't been much of anything since Dominic Hixon got injured, blew out his knee a few years ago. He was the last of the good Giants return guys.
And subsequently, they moved the ball up 5 yards, so you're not going to have the opportunities that you would have had in the
past. Right. So why then do these guys decide they want to run out of the end zone?
Well, now, I will tell you this. Demps has a track record of being very good on kickoff returns. Why it's not happening right now, I will tell you, in all the years, in 32 years now, I've been covering the Giants in the NFL, special teams is my weakest area. I'm going to tell you that flat out. As much film as I watch, as much numbers that I study and trends and formations, special teams is my weakest area. I don't know why, but outside of David Meggett, Ron Dixon, and Dominic Hixon, over the last 35 years, the Giants have really not had much of a return game. I don't know. Do you have an answer for me?
Yeah, you know, and I think return guys are really streaky. You know, and you look at the punt return. A 9-yard punt return is a lot. I mean, that'll lead the league. And you know, in a kickoff, you know, you should get 18, anywhere north of 18 yards is about average, especially now because guys kind of have that autonomy to say, all right, should I take it out? Should I not? I mean, I'm seeing kickoff returns 6 yards back in the end zone. Guys are fighting to get to the 16-yard line.
You want these numbers?
Yeah,
Roman?
Let me
you
see
just told me what's decent, what's good.
Yeah.
One, Darren Sproles, third in the NFL with 15.9 yards on punt returns.
Yeah, well, that's because he's had a couple of big ones. His longest is 82.
82 for a touchdown, but he's had 14 returns.
Right.
So that's not totally shaded now. That's a legit number. Now, Polk has only had 5 kickoff returns for 202 yards. He had a 102-yard touchdown return. The average comes out to 40 yards a pop. Now, that's skewed because he only had 5. But the truth of the matter is, the Eagles aren't just deadly in their return game. They've also had 2 block punts that they took in for touchdowns. So they've had 4 special teams touchdowns in 5 games.
Right.
If that's not enough to make you concerned, then I don't know what is.
And I know that Coach Quinn and Izzo and their projectors are working late this week trying to make sure that doesn't happen on Sunday. And honestly, I think it's nothing more than that. 41st, 42nd, 43rd, 45th guy that dresses, make sure they do their job because that could be a backbreaker. To give up a punt return for a touchdown or a block on the road, you know, Tom likes to talk about this. The percentage of winning is 84%, but whatever that number is, you cannot afford in a divisional game or any game on the road to give up a return for a touchdown or a blocked. I mean, you get one touchdown blocked. I talked about this yesterday. I mean, you get one punt blocked. Your average drops about 15 yards, and it's a dogfight to get that average back up again for the rest of the season. I mean, imagine all those 40s and 39-yard averages. You put a zero in there, I mean, you're down to 29 average as a punter, and now you're automatically at the bottom of the league. So the guys up front, the personal protectors, the wings, all those guys, the upbacks, they've got to do their jobs this week, and there cannot be any miscommunication in that punting category.
I will tell you one thing, you know, when you're in a hostile environment like it's going to be Sunday in Philly, and you know that, Roman, I mean, you've been there before.
Right.
You know what it's going to be like. Very few things, and there are a lot of good plays that can happen that can get the crowd going, but very few things can really jack up a building more than a special teams big play.
Right.
That just elevates the building tenfold.
And there's nothing more demoralizing than a special teams big play from the road team. I mean, how about – we talk about these return guys – how about the Giants have a big return this week, at least up to midfield, Preston Parker,
you could hear a
somebody.
Pin drop at the building.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Jay from East Bay, you are next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hello.
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
Good to talk to you.
Hey, Mike, my comment is to whenever we get a takeaway in the last couple of games, whether it's a fumble, whether it's an interception, there's a lot of duking and diving, slipping and sliding. And a lot of times I see that sometimes as you can lose the ball. I understand that when you get a takeaway, you want to see how much yards you can get to add to it. But, man, it terrifies me when they're dancing back there. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I go back to that Washington game, Prince Amukamara's interception. If Hankins or Colin Jenkins, somebody, if they would have blocked for him that at that last second, I mean, he cuts back. He loses about 8 yards backwards and goes sideways just to get back to his original spot.
Yeah.
I'm sure you remember that. And
right.
But defensive guys are just so competitive. And trust me.
They want to score.
It's already given that you have the possession. So you're trying to help the offense. And these guys, they want to score. I mean, it used to drive me nuts to see Felipe Sparks, Seahorn, Sam Garns, Sean Williams, you know, throw the ball back and forth to each other, and I see John Fox going nuts on the sidelines. And as an offensive player, he's like saying, look, just get down, put on one knee, we'll go out there and we'll convert it at least to a field goal or a touchdown. But, yeah, Jay, I agree 100%. I always hold my breath when I see an interception. And to see Prince Mukamura do that, I mean, we've gotten to a place where I was happy that he's catching interceptions. Now he's trying to score. And he said that last week in pregame that he went from haven't had any turnovers, now get turnovers. They went from now having turnovers, now let's score. So it's a good problem to have when you're having this discussion about why are these guys juking and jiving in the defensive secondary when they get an interception. But ball security is important. You don't want to see an interception, a guy trying to fight for extra yards, a ball gets stripped and comes back for a touchdown. I was a part of a San Diego Chargers team that lost a playoff game because a 4th and 8, Colts go for a go for it. Guy intercepts the ball. Instead of going on one knee, he tries to return it. Ball gets stripped. Patriots get the ball back. They beat us when I was in San Diego. So I've seen where that could destroy a football team.
And the Giants actually had an interception the other day against Atlanta. Wasn't it McBride who had a pick? And then in his return, fumbled the football back to the Falcons. As it turned out, there was a penalty on Prince Amukamara anyway, so it wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah, but still.
But that very bad thing to your defense just happened the other day. All right, let's go to the Twitters because we got a bunch of phone calls that we've been getting to, and we really ignored these folks, and I don't want to do that. So let's see here. We've got Allie says, headphones on in the office. Props to the Giants O-line for coming together after an offseason of nagging. I am getting happy. Well, that O-line's making a lot of people happy these days. Eli Manning is getting to be upright, and he's only thrown one pick in the last three games. Edward Perkins says, won't be at MetLife for a game, watching home. Well, you know what? If he's at MetLife, he's got a problem because the game's in Philly.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry.
Unless he's checking out that Broncos-Jets game.
That's true. Well, maybe they're going to play the Giant game on the big screen after the Broncos game is over. Huh? That'd be kind of neat. I don't know anyone who's got a TV that big in their living room except Jerry Jones.
Yeah, probably. He's probably the only guy.
Okay. We've got, let's see here. Who else? Giants chat. Oh, looks like that might be it. I know why. I forgot the S. That's why they want more here. Giants chat. Here we go. Oh, boy, we got a bunch of them. Avery says it's still a stupid play, dancing around after a pick, trying to get more yardage. There's no place to go. We have Eagles equals zero Super Bowls. How about that for a Twitter handle? That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
He says the Eagles will be wearing black unis on Sunday. They might be preparing for their own funeral. We've heard that joke many times before. The Giants actually started that when they went out to Arizona for Super Bowl 42.
Right.
And Antonio Pierce told Strahan, let's wear all black because we're going to the Patriots' funeral. And that worked out pretty well.
Yeah, it did.
Joey LZNYG says Giants win 28-17, give or take a point on each side, but that will be the roundabout score of the game. Benjamin Zwig says, in thinking of starting a petition, have the Green Men, G-Men, wear their 80s and 90s unis once a year, would you sign it? Well, let me ask you something.
Right.
Okay, when you were here, you had the Giants word on the side of your helmet.
Right.
They had since gone back in the 2000 season to the traditional NY. Do the players give two hoots about what's on the jersey or what's on the helmet? Does the design make any difference at all? Because I will tell you this, I'm a traditionalist, and I've always liked to see the uniforms or the helmets stay as close to the tradition as possible. I know they're going to be tweaks, but I'm not one who likes all this nouveau stuff.
Yeah, and if you look at the organizations that are considered, you know, the marquee organizations, if you will, Giants, you know, Steelers, Green Bay. I mean, you'd like to see those traditional uniforms. You know, as things change and you know, marketing departments get really sexy with their decision making on some of these. I mean, I've seen some ugly in Tampa Bay.
The monochrome ugly stuff.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, yeah. John, help me out here. Harold, right, John, our producer, he agrees, and that's all I need to know.
Yeah, no.
But the all black, the all green, the all orange, the all red.
Yeah.
The Jets had that all green. Remember they wore the green jerseys, green pants? That is dreadful.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, the only things I appreciated, as you know from my years in San Diego, the powder blues, you know.
That was cool.
Which was a throwback to, you know, all the, you know, I can't remember anybody's Winslow, Kellen Winslow, those guys.
Oh, John Hadle.
Yeah, John Hadle. I mean,
way
those,
back.
You know, wearing those powder blue uniforms. So there was a purity about that. And for some, you know, and the players always wanted to wear those every week. But it was always cool when you knew which games you're going to wear the powder blue older.
They did care.
Yeah, they did care. But
wow.
But I think you talk about the traditional teams like the Giants. I mean, it's good to see them keep that history because you could see the lineage of what other players had to go through before you.
I'm going to say something that Giants fans out there are not going to like.
What's that?
I like when the Dallas Cowboys wear those stars
yeah.
on the shoulders
yeah.
and the white and the blue.
Yeah,
and the
no.
Whole, and that old Texans – the old Texan-style Dallas Cowboys jersey, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I'm not one who likes the Nouveau stuff, but that's pretty cool.
And we can be appreciative of the game in terms of the bigger picture. I mean, it's okay. I mean, Giants fans are – I mean, I'm a Giants fan at heart because I'm emotionally involved with the team winning, and I played for Big Blue my first 4 years in the league. But, again, that's why we talk about the bigger picture sometimes. You can appreciate some of those other uniforms.
And I will tell you this.
And hate some of the bad ones, too.
I do like the Eagles' green helmets with the white wing as opposed to the old Roman Gabriel helmets,
yeah.
which were white with the green wing.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough about jerseys. There's a big game on Sunday night. Carrie from New York, you're next on the show. Hello. Nice to talk to you.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
We do now.
Hello?
Yes, hello, Carrie.
Hi, it's Kelly, actually. Hello.
Yes, good to speak with you.
Well, I agree with the uniform thing. I love our traditional blue jerseys and the white with the red. I think they look great on everybody.
That's cool.
But I'm calling in because I had some concerns with our defense missing some tackles last week, and I know you touched on that earlier.
Yeah.
But I want to know, it's so frustrating with being a Giants fan, is why do they take so long to get it together?
Well, you have to understand, they changed over two dozen players from last year's roster.
Yep.
They brought in a bunch of new assistant coaches, specifically on the offensive side of the ball. And football
right.
is a very delicate game. It's a real domino effect. When you change one thing in the NFL, usually a lot of other things have to follow suit with it. It's not like just taking out, a new pen and saying, okay, I can write as well as I used to. That's not the deal. There's an impact. There's a collateral impact on everything you
right.
do in the NFL.
Right. Yeah, and I don't think players say, all right, we're going to just hang around for a year or 6 months and then finally start playing football. I mean, you go out there and practice and prepare to want to win every week. So, but we're glad that the Giants, have 30 points a game the last 3 weeks and they're playing with some really good confidence and momentum right now.
Carrie, anything else?
No, I just wanted to say that they look really great. I'm so happy, and I look forward to winning on Sunday.
Okay, appreciate the call. Thanks so much. You know, it was funny, Roman. We talked about it during training camp, and when I came out and told people, wait till the end of September, get to 2-2, find your sea legs, and see where the arrow's pointing at that point in time,
right.
people looked at me like I had four heads. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. This is the NFL. You can't be going in expecting fireworks in the five preseason games, which is what a lot of fans did. They were impatient, and they wanted McAdoo's offense to put up 40 points, even though the preseason games were too early to expect the players to know the system well, and the starters were only playing 15 to 20 snaps.
But I think, to be honest, to look back on it now in retrospect, the Giants got what they wanted out of preseason.
They did.
And we talked about this in August, Paul. No team needed five preseason games more than the Giants
yeah.
in terms of the things they had to do and the roster turnover, the new offense. And you're right, it wasn't going to look perfect. And I mentioned this the first 2 weeks all through camp. I played on a West Coast offense team, and we that team won the Super Bowl in Tampa, and we struggled. We struggled. The first – we were winning games 13-10. We had some buffers, and, we played a Baltimore team that was bad and blew them out, but – it took to about week 8, and thank goodness for our defense. We were 6-2 at that point. Then we really the offense really started to click. We're scoring 30 points, 35 points. But it's not an exact science, but you trust that these guys over time will continue to play well and continue to improve. It's good to see this productivity this early in the season because I was expecting a lot of 21-17 wins and to squeak out of there alive. Like you said, 2-2 and then see where the chips fall. But we're all pleasant. I think we need to stop having this discussion about how bad preseason was because the Giants have proven why preseason was. It was still a discovery, and we're still getting there. And on all these things you heard, growing pains, all those words you heard in preseason, all that made sense now that we look back on it.
No question. I think the important thing is here, now that the arrow is starting to go in the upwards direction, you don't want to see one step forward, two steps back. You just want to see continual improvement, continued progress. And as long as that arrow keeps going this way, the Giants will probably wind up being in playoff contention.
Yeah, and the arrow can only go that way. The only thing that can prevent the arrow from going this way is turnovers and penalties and things that – that just,
well, injuries too, Roman.
Well, injuries, yeah.
I mean,
exactly.
Jennings is down now, but I think they can withhold, sustain that one.
But in terms of execution, I mean, guys are familiar. They look comfortable. There's a growing confidence. I'm going to mention that all week. But, again, outside of injuries, turnovers or just costly mistakes are going to be really the only thing that can keep this team from maximizing their true potential.
Because they do have enough talent to be a playoff team if they get everything done
right
and correctly and stay healthy. Andrew from Virginia, you're next on the show. Hello.
Hey,
hello, Andrew. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Good.
All right. So you guys touched on this a little bit earlier, and I'm just – I had to go away from the show for a bit. I don't know if he answered it. I tweeted it in. It was a question, but it's basically this. Is it game plan – like, pick your poison. Do you want to stop the running backs, or do you want to shut down the wide receivers and the tight ends? Because you can't shut everything down, and you have to really pick your poison, it seems. So I'm just wondering if Perry Fuel has game-planned to shut down some of these wide receivers that we've faced the past several weeks. And they kind of know that, well, if our linebackers get exposed a little bit with these running backs, these smaller scat back guys, who have taken it for big chunks of yardage in the Redskins game and last week's game as well. Are the Giants consciously saying, well, yeah, but look at everybody else we did shut down?
I think your question about pick your poison and what do you want to defend, you're right in that they would prefer to defend the deep ball and not get beat over the top. I understand that because it happened in Detroit with Calvin Johnson, and that wasn't very pretty. And then they gave up a couple of deep balls again in the ensuing weeks, but they were able to withstand those. I think what you have to remember is that it's one thing to say we're going to give up the short stuff. It's another thing to give up too much room to have missed tackles or to allow that short stuff turn into a long one.
Long gains, yeah.
That's 100%. The problem right now. They're not closing fast enough on the short stuff.
Yeah, and Andrew,
we kind of saw it coming, though, didn't we? And especially when you look at McCoy and Sproles this week, I mean, this fits right into
it. Does
like where our weak spot?
It absolutely does.
You even want to call it a weak spot.
I agree with you.
What do you think we're going to do here?
Well,
we
can't
linebackers.
Well, Andrew, let me answer the question.
Well, he's going to take it from here. Andrew, thanks for the call.
Okay, cool.
Listen up.
Thanks, Ron.
Well, number one, we won't know exactly what Perry Fuel's game plan is for Sunday, but this approach of keying on Sproles at the expense of giving up the deep balls or the intermediate stuff, I mean, you can't pay your electric and not pay the water bill. I mean, you've got to pay both. You've got to do everything. And you've got to be able to – I mean, there will be some guys on Sunday defensively that are just going to have to defend guys one-on-one, corners, safeties, linebackers. Jaquan Williams is going to have – he cannot miss LeSean McCoy when he gets in his area. The defensive line, Nick Foles has really been untouched. He's been
14 quarterback hits this season.
Yeah, 14 hits this season. Earlier in the season, he wasn't didn't have a lot of pressure. But you've got to continue to do your pressure. So at each level, D-line, linebackers, secondary, all three levels defensively, everyone's going to have to play pretty good. I mean, this is an explosive offense. But it's not a what do we think they're going to key on, because there's nothing to key on. There's a plan for everything. It's just that at some point, there will be some one-on-ones where Jaquan Williams has LeSean McCoy by himself, and he's going to have to make sure he gets to him before he turns his shoulder pads north and south of that line of scrimmage.
You know, Roman, sometimes, and I know it's hard for fans to truly understand this, but sometimes the offense actually calls the perfect play for the defense that you called as well.
Right.
And when that happens, it turns into a very nice play for the offense.
Right.
It's just going to occur every once in a while. You know, you're going to call the blitz, and they're going to hit the screen to the backside, and all of a sudden it's a 35-yard gain, and you, as a fan, are screaming, oh, you know, what did they do wrong? No, it's what did the offense do right?
Right.
They called the right play against that defense. It's going to happen sometimes. What the Giants need to do is to make sure, because the Eagles are such an outstanding screen team, is read their keys, understand when that screen is coming, and then make sure they're fundamentally sound in their lanes, in their gaps, and break it down. They don't want to over-pursue, and they don't want to get fooled into getting sucked into something that's not, and then the Eagles wind up playing double trickery on them, and they get burned.
Yeah, and I think one thing that Chip Kelly appreciated or that he kept from Andy Reid's team is the screens. I mean, this team for the last 15 years was
a good screen
team.
They're great at
it. They always had undersized guys. So when Chip Kelly got this job, it really played well into what he wanted to do offensively because he already had a majority of the personnel that he wanted. It's not like taking a bunch of power backs and making them little scat back guys. I mean, he had McCoy. He had DeSean Jackson, or at least last year he did. I mean, he had the pieces in place. So, you're right. I mean, they've done well on screens. I mean, and again, they will make some plays, guys. I mean, they're going to make some plays. They might make several plays. It might come down to the fourth quarter. I don't think it's going to be a 34-28 like last week, where it's a track meet, a shootout, if you will.
I don't think so either.
But if it is, the Giants have to play winning football in the fourth quarter and find a way to win. So. That's really all that matters. And again, you can't – this time next week we're saying, well, the Giants gave up a 50-yarder here. Well, yeah, I mean, the Eagles are going to make some plays, but you can't let it be a determinant factor in the outcome of the game, and that's where it'll kill you. Fourth quarter, you're down, they're going to the score, then you rip a screen for 50 yards and they win the game. Those are the big plays that hurt you.
Right.
A big play early on, you adjust at halftime, then you neutralize it in the second half. Those are things that will happen throughout the course of a game.
I do want to take one point here, and then we've got to really get back to the calls. We're running out of time. I do want to say one thing, though, about the screen. And, you know, when you're a coordinator, every time you call a defensive play, there's a risk and a reward. You know, that's just the way the game is played. It's a chess match, okay? I will say one thing. It is probably more important than any game this year so far that the Giants' front four gets penetration along the front line. Because if they can do that, we've already seen that Foles gets disrupted. We've already seen that long passing game of the Eagles isn't what it used to be. If the Giants can get pressure from those guys up front, Roman, now they don't have to blitz very much.
Right.
If they don't have to blitz very much, now not only are they playing more sound in the secondary because they can give more attention to the secondary, that also means the linebackers can stay at home and worry about defending the screen pass.
Oh,
okay?
100%.
That's the best way the Giants can defend this Eagles defense, is put it on the shoulders of the front four and say, you guys get after Foles. We don't want to have to worry about risking a blitz. That's the best way.
Right. And if you can get to them with four, that leaves you seven extra guys. I mean, you're really outmatched because you got five offensive linemen. They can't go out for passes. And you've got a quarterback, obviously. So you're really
put the numbers in your favor.
Yeah, you're really beating six people with four guys. And now you've got seven to cover six on the other side.
That's why coaches always say.
I mean, seven to cover five, I'm sorry.
That's why coaches always say, if we can get pressure with four, that makes life easier. Well, it's never more easier than it is against the Philadelphia Eagles. No question about that. Darcy from Charlotte, you are next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We're running out of time. Go ahead.
Yes. Thank you guys so much for your service to the organization. Really appreciate all that you
do. Thank you
for watching.
Thank you.
Okay. Listen, I didn't get a chance to read the article that Roman and Anita were talking about yesterday, but I was thinking about Coach and how he's made this change and giving up control to, you know, of the offense to Ben McAdoo. And it seems like he did the same sort of – he had a drastic change in his approach in 2007, if I'm remembering correctly. And also, number two, I've encountered some Eagles fans down here, at least one in particular here on the convention, who was very nervous about the Giants coming in. He felt like they were breathing down the Eagles' neck. So could you talk about what exactly do the Eagles have to be afraid of in terms of, you know, the play of the team
right.
in general and
Darcy,
individual
we'll
players?
We'll
Thank
let you,
you.
Go
I'll
and answer this in reverse.
Off.
I'll let you answer the question about yesterday. About Coughlin, I don't understand what she's talking about.
I don't even remember the article. I might need help from you guys in the back. I don't even remember the article.
Okay, it had to do with Coughlin relinquishing some control to
the assistants. Oh, yeah. Well, it was in terms of it was just about the offense and Ben McAdoo and how I mentioned that it showed the greatness of a leader is showed when he can listen to his stakeholders, if you will, his locker room, and give up a lot of his authority for the greater good of the team and the organization. And that's what Coach Kaufman did in 2007. And that's what he did when Gilbride left, departure of Gilbride, and you bring in Brent McAdoo, a guy who was really a tight ends coach a majority of his career and quarterbacks coach the last couple of years. Right. Now you bring the 36-year-old guy in who's never called plays to solve the problem. And it seems like it's working. So that's what I remember that now.
Okay.
We were talking about in terms of leadership. It shows the kind of leader that Tom Coughlin is, and that's what's really kept him young. And this is an era where the 67-year-old guy can't reach the kids with the dreadlocks and the tattoos and, you know,
right.
this current modern-day NFL player. That's not true. Guys still need discipline. They still need parameters. They still need rules. They still need men that can lead. They still need to be led. And it shows you that, you know, Tom Coughlin's level of effectiveness – and ability to continue to reinvent himself and do what players need is what's made him successful.
Rocky, we'll go to you in just a second to follow up and finish the answer to your question, Darcy. What do the Eagles have to fear with the Giants? The power running game,
right,
which is going well right now. We've talked about the Eagles have hurt inside linebackers. So if I'm the Eagles, I'm definitely concerned about that. And on the other side of the ball, the Giant pass rush, which does seem to be getting pressure with those front four, like I just talked about a few minutes ago.
Right.
If they could continue to do that, which I would suspect against that Eagles banged-up offensive line, they should be able to. Those are the two things, if I'm Philadelphia, I'm most concerned about. And maybe Odell Beckham, too.
We'll see. Go.
Rocky from Panama City, you're last on the show. Hi.
How's it going, fellas?
Real good. Quick, my friend, we got 2 minutes.
Okay, hey, one thing I wanted to correct John yesterday, what he said just for the callers, somebody was saying something about a full house backfield. John said Hillis had never played fullback, but he did.
Sure he has. Yeah, he's a tweener. He's played both.
Okay, but Dave was talking from Philly when he was on the show the other day saying that, you know, the defense that right now for Philly is scheming to get pass rush, and I was wondering, you know, now they're a 3-4 defense and Trent Coles out at linebacker, and you know, I've been wanting us to go to a balanced defense on second and long, third and long, so like with Moore maybe standing up as that outside wheel pass rusher in that defense, do y'all think that's a chance?
Well, here, if I'm the Giants, one of the things that I want to take advantage of, first of all, is that power running game. Now, they're going to go with Cox, Logan, and Thornton up front as their base 3-4.
Right.
What I notated was Thornton gets good push. I noticed that Cox is a strong player. But outside of that, that's a bit of an issue because these guys are not your typical pass-rushing type of defensive lineman, Roman. You've seen it on the tape as well.
No, you're right.
And so what the Giants want to do is hit them with the power running game first, and then once they get those guys sucked into that and they start bringing safeties up, now Eli goes over the top.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, and that's that chess match, if you will, in terms of showing that you can put 4 or 5 yards on the ground to pop.
Got to do that first.
Minimizing that those long third downs, and that's when you can go over the top, because that's what the Eagles are going to try to do to the Giants as well.
Yeah. All right, Roman, I think we're done for the day.
All right, good stuff, Paul.
All right, as always, 201-939-4513 is our phone number, or hashtag Giants Chat. Again, Big Blue Kickoff Live here, live from the Giants facility, Monday to Friday from 12 noon to 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. We hope you'll stick around and join us all season long. So long, everybody.